Welcome back, everybody. We are here for another One Great Work Warrior roundtable discussion, and this is going to be a fun topic, a very interesting topic, and a show you are not going to want to miss. And I think you're going to be able to relate to this topic immensely, because this is a topic that I think all of us at some point or another have actually thought about and kind of looked into, and just I know I've thought about it a lot. And so I'm hoping everybody's going to enjoy this. I know that Derek is going to kick this off, so I want to pass it right over to Derek. Go ahead, Derek, break down what this topic is about and this show is all about.
Sure thing, Rick. Yeah, thank you so much. Good evening, gentlemen. Great to see y'all. And thank you, everyone, out for tuning in. We are talking about mainstream psychopathy and how it's been filtered through the media and whatever they be feeding you and us. And kind of glorifying the villains a little bit, but kind of over obsessing with some of these anti-heroic tropes, if you will. And studying up for this chat, trying to take it more serious and all these things. You know, we're all trying to level up with, you know, what we're bringing to the table here at the One Great Work Warriors. I noticed there's just a lot of gray area with this whole idea of what is the anti-hero, and you can throw out, you know, characters like Wolverine, even Spider-Man, the Punisher, and, you know, we're going from, you know, comics to TV series to movies, obviously, and books, novels, and all these things, right? So, and this goes back to ancient times, you know, think about the court jesters, with that trickster energy and all these things, and, you know, like even some of those, you know, comedians, and take it to modern times with the comics and the movie The Watchmen with the comedian. You know, he was like the most controversial character in that group of quote unquote heroes, which, you know, people can look at these heroes that kind of take it upon themselves to, you know, try to bring justice upon society in their mind, you know, despite, you know, moral dilemmas. You know, there's this moral complexity around these things, obviously, right? That's like kind of an overarching theme that we're going to be going over. And I'll list some movies and stuff like that soon enough. But and also like how many video games are going on right now? We're celebrating all like the Assassin's Creed and all these things, despite, is it a rebel with or without a cause? And are they aligned to natural laws and things of that nature, right? So think about these things while we get into the thick of things. And I'm just going to pass it right on to Chris and shuffle my notes around a little bit. So, yeah.
Thanks, Derek. Always love the rhymes that get tossed in the salad. That's pretty exciting. And, you know, hero... I'm thinking about what is a hero, because when I was a kid, I used to daydream in class, and daydreaming wasn't allowed. You weren't supposed to be daydreaming. And that was one thing that trips me back, you know, trips me out when I think back about school, you know, how daydreaming's bad, you know, but I would daydream about like some bad guy's going to come in the classroom, like, and start beating up the teacher and being mean to all the kids. And I'm going to like rush out of my seat, and I'm going to grab him behind the neck and wrestle him. And, you know, the cops are going to come and I'm going to be the hero. You know, like I used to always imagine stuff like that all the time as a kid. And I don't know if that's a natural thing, but thinking back, there were a lot of shows that molded this aspect of my mind that I later have become very suspect of. And I started noticing it through different movies and television shows mostly. And then it finally really sunk in on that show that was just so sick and twisted. I couldn't believe it. I was watching it with my ex-wife, and it was called Dexter. And I was just like, I can't believe this. You know, it was just blowing my mind that even such a thing could be out there. Because what's happened is you're the hero, the main guy of the story is a complete and utter psychopath. And to the point of killing people methodically and having in-depth plans on how to do that and posing as a hero. And what I realized is I think that show finally made it really dawn upon me that when you watch these shows, you kind of get drawn into looking at it from the eyes of the person you're looking at, the subject. Even if you know it's a bad guy, it becomes your hero. You become one in a way with the so-called hero, who's actually an evildoer, thus the anti-hero. A hero is supposed to be a protector. You know, it comes from old French, Latin heroes, demigod. I think Homer, like the Greeks before the Troy, they had the heroic age, you know, and that's, I think in my mind where this word likely kind of comes from, a lot of that, those old writings. Whether that be Epicurus or something. No, Epicurus was a Stoic. I get those guys confused. Nevertheless, it doesn't matter. The word would mean a man with great bravery or a defender or a protector. And even they have a separate word for heroine. It's kind of hard for me to say. Heroine, a female hero, certainly acceptable. But yeah, it's pretty devastating, I think, what's happened through the negative aspects of our culture in our lifetime and probably in the generations leading up to us, especially through the television and the technology that's putting us in this weird place of teaching us to think psychopathically, psychopath, like a psychopath, and to see it through the eyes of a psychopath. And the reason I started with my story about being a kid in school is because, like, I was real into like G.I. Joe and Wolverine. Derek, you were mentioning, you know, some of these different things. And I think back and like, I think that created that part of me that thought it was cool to be a hero. But not only that, but an association with like beating up, killing, shooting, destroying, getting the bad guys. You know, definitely there was an association with that that took me years and years before I was able to analyze it objectively and be like, what the fuck is going on in my mind that I think that's cool? You know what I mean? So yeah, this is an exciting topic for me, something I wanted to talk about for a long time. So I'll pass it on to who's next. Jerry, you got something on your mind there?
I do, Chris. That was great. So yeah, for me, as I'm sitting here thinking about what am I gonna say during this topic, this discussion, I had to kind of dig deep, of course, as with every single topic we discuss. But for this one, I was like, where do I want to go with this? What's the angle I want to hit it from? Like, what's the purpose of this talk? And I kind of had to remember when this topic was first brought up, which I think you mentioned, Chris, about the Dexter series. And I had mentioned to you guys, I think I binge watched that series. I watched like 5 seasons in, I don't know, like 2 weeks. And the thing that I was thinking about was, you have this character Dexter, who is a child, and he's along with his brother, and he sees his mother get killed in front of him. And there's all this blood, and that supposedly messes up his brain. And then as he's growing up as a kid, the person taking care of him catches him like killing birds, and like little by little, I suppose that childhood trauma led him to, I guess, do that. And then he ends up being a psychopath, and he targets these bad people that, for example, murdered people. So it's kind of like what they're doing is like they want you to, I guess, have empathy for the character. And there's this, I mean, with other movies like Joker, right? I honestly didn't really know much about the Joker. I just knew he's the bad guy. But when after watching the film, just kind of realizing how he was treated by his mother, it's like it's terrible. And it's kind of, I mean, just with Dexter and the Joker, they had this childhood trauma, and that carries on into the adult life. So that's like it's very important to essentially consciously parent. And so I just, you know, thought of that connection there. But they want you to develop the empathy for these anti-heroes. You always have to question, is what they're doing moral or not? And when they could be doing good 90% of the time, but if they do something immoral, that really makes me not like the person as much. I start to kind of question the series as to, or I even just asked, are people catching on to this, that this is immoral? That is not correct behavior. I mean, the whole goal of media is to teach people objective morality. I mean, of course, people don't even know that. So I think this is a great topic of discussion, so we can kind of raise that awareness. So I will pass it on to Brandon.
I'm going to tackle the psychopath aspect first. Then I'm going to talk about the anti-hero on my second part. So let's define what a psychopath is. Of course, you know, meaning of words are important. A morally irresponsible person, you know, a person with no moral conscience, or a person who disobeys moral conscience, conscience, and follows their impulses, comes from Greek, which means soul suffering. So a true psychopath would be someone, you know, who is suffering of the soul, or, you know, spiritual suffering. Like, there's a deep suffering within them. And there are degrees to psychopathy. I'm not merely talking about, you know, a true psychopath. I'm mainly coming about, you know, what someone would call like a level two or a conditioned psychopath. You know, one that's been brought up in an unfavorable environment, you know, with the lack of love, the lack of care, or the lack of true love and a lack of true care. Because honestly, I don't think most human beings on the planet have actually experienced what true love is and have experienced what true care is, because we associate love with just a feeling, and it goes beyond that. Love is an action and behavior that is displayed in reality. You know, you can have feelings for someone, but that doesn't always equate to love. You know, it may be eros, but it's not agape. So, you know, we're talking about immorality and wrong behavior being injected in society, which is what I, you know, talked about in my Freedom Under Natural Law 4 presentation, you know, devoid of conscience while lacking consciousness. You know, so you condition an individual to become desensitized to immoral behaviors. You get them to become desensitized to violence. You get them to become desensitized to rape. You get them to become desensitized to slavery. You get them to, you know, become desensitized to wrong action and wrong behaviors, to where people start to turn a blind eye to it. They start to accept it. They start to tolerate it, you know, more and more. So what does it mean to desensitize? It means to make or become insensitive. So what does the word insensitive mean? Little reaction, or what it is perceived with the senses, or it can mean having little to do with mental or moral sensitivity. Keyword, moral sensitivity. So, you know, through conditioning, through repetition, through programming, through schooling, through mind control, because that's really what we are talking about, is mind control, is you can desensitize, you know, individuals to become less aware of certain immoral behaviors that they would normally respond to. And we see this, you know, in modern entertainment and in the media with the violent imagery, you know, with the violent images. You know, in the early 2000s, or like the late 90s, you know, you had the saying, a picture is worth 1,000 words. Well, it's way more deeper than that. It's not just 1,000 words. A picture is worth 1,000 thoughts. A picture is worth 1,000, you know, internal emotions. Because think about it, an image creates thoughts. It creates imagination. It creates feelings. It creates cognition. It creates inner exploration. So if you have an individual who's constantly taking in violent imagery, you know, constantly taking in, you know, immoral, you know, information, there is an over bombardment, there is an over stimulation, there is an over sensualization, you know, while taking this stuff in, what does that do to their internal makeup? You know, can you actually create a psychopath in doing this, you know, through her repetition, through schooling, through the constant bombardment? If this individual has never experienced what true love is, if this individual has never experienced what true care is, would you say that those constant bombardment and repetition of images could create a kind of trauma-like effect? Remember in some of the early Hollywood mind control movies, what would they do to kind of create that Manchurian candidate? Wouldn't they kind of like kidnap them and put them in the room and just constantly show them, you know, violent imagery, show them images of war, you know, like show them images, images of rape, of violence, constantly over and over and over and over in repetition, and get it programmed in their subconscious mind to where you get them to disassociate for themselves, to get them to disassociate from reality, to get them to disassociate from what true conscience is? You know, it was, you know, displayed in some of the early depictions, and, you know, these images and thoughts, you know, create so much cognition and so much, you know, mentation internally, you know, and we see it in sports, you know, you got pro athletes fighting, you got the crowd cheering them on. It's like, where's the sense of morality? Where's the sense of right and wrong? And then we hear it in, you know, in the music now. It's all crap. It's all garbage. It's all low consciousness, you know, tailored, you know, lyrics that, you know, are usually there to bypass the conscious mind. You know, so when this toxic environment is put in place, can we truly thrive in a toxic environment? Or is it like, you know, the true saying, garbage in equates to garbage out? You know, so you're talking about the trivium and the poisoning of information, the poisoning of grammar, the poisoning of knowledge, the poisoning of the input stage. So then therefore, what's going to be, you know, the output? And we wonder why we see a breakdown in relationships. We wonder why we see a breakdown in society. We wonder why we see a disconnect and a disassociation with conscience. And when you are an adult, you know, it's one thing, because that care, that ability to truly feel, to have true empathy, starts to be chipped away, you know. So it's like a state of erosion, you know, the constant chipping away, the constantly consuming of your ability to care, to feel, to be a true human. But what happens when a child is brought up in that hell environment? It's not so much an eroding of conscience. It's a more like retarded form of what is happening, to where it's a stunting, you know, and to stunt something just means an impaired growth or an impaired, you know, development. So you have a child who has been stunted in their own psyche, in their own, you know, true spirituality, in their own makeup. How can this stunted, slowed down, retarded, impaired child create, you know, true relationships with somebody else if they lack that, you know, ability to feel, if they lack that, you know, ability to empathize with others, if they lack that ability to display and feel true love? Not just eros, I meant like true love as in, you know, like agape. Would that have an effect on them being able to discern and decode and navigate in reality, you know, later on in life? Because again, if someone has an impaired growth or there is impaired, you know, development, technically this individual is broken, you know. So you break them, you disconnect them, there's a disassociation with true care of themselves, of reality. And we wonder why we see a lot of people acting the way that they do, to where they've never really learned to experience those, you know, true emotions And then when they do, they just lash out almost like a state of regression. You know, they revert back to that, you know, that childlike, you know, mentality, you know, that childlike mentality, because technically they've been robbed of that ability to truly feel and empathize. Then when they are put in that situation, they don't know how to deal with it. And therefore you have that state of regression. You know, you have that childlike state that's being brought back out. And that's what the social engineers want to see. That's what they love, because an individual who doesn't know how to control their emotions will always be in a childlike state. And, you know, learning to control those, you know, healthy emotions are key. But, you know, with this psychopathy being so worldwide, you know, people truly lack the ability to truly empathize, you know, empathize with others. And that true empathy is being chipped away. And that's why I kind of called it the cremation of care. You know, ritual is in all aspects of society, because that ritual was a symbolic mockery to destroy care. Well, isn't that what's being doing in all, you know, like of these movies? Isn't that what, you know, like the news is doing constantly, is bombarding people with these, you know, like these ridiculous stories of just violence, you know, rape, war, you know, it's always, you know, something, you know, that's negative. Well, isn't that, you know, on a deeper level, truly destroying people's ability to feel and care, because they're in this constant state of fear. And if you're in this constant state of fear, you can't create anything out of it. So then therefore you can never create the conditions to even change or to truly create in reality. So, you know, when we see the psychopathy in all aspects of society, we really have to look at it and analyze it and say, you know, why is it that this negativity is everywhere? Because it is literally everywhere. I'll pass it on to Rick.
Thank you, Brandon. That was awesome, by the way. You guys all make great points. And I have to say, Chris, I'm like, when I think back to my childhood, I'm very much like you. I was a daydreamer and definitely was very active imagination. So
Bad boy.
What's that?
Bad boy, says the
teacher. I know. I had a healthy imagination. So I remember playing with friends and stuff like that. We'd all be superheroes, or we'd be whatever, and trying to rescue the damsel in distress kind of thing and saving the world. So I remember, just made me kind of laugh when you brought that up, because that's what I was like as a kid too. And I'm fascinated by this topic, as I was saying in the intro, and I hope other people have thought about this too, because it's masterfully done what they're doing, the social engineers. And you guys make great points. I'm glad that kind of Brandon touched on the psychopathy and the psycho part of it, because I think that's what, I know that's what they're feeding into. And I think of characters like the Joker, and I wonder why do people identify so deeply and love these characters so much? And I've always wondered that. And when I think of all of these characters, I'm like, what is going on? And then I slowly see, you know, the social engineers, whoever you want to call them, whenever they feed into that, because they know deep down that we all have that in us. We all have this dark part of us, and you're either in control of it or you're letting it run amok. And I think they really do feed into that. That's what they target. And especially emotions. I notice in stuff, they really start pulling on emotions and getting you very emotionally involved in things. And once you're in that state, you're easy to manipulate, in my opinion. And so, yeah, I wonder about characters like the Joker. And I think of a lot of the TV shows out there and movies. It's hard pressed to find a movie that isn't, or a TV show that isn't quality. It's all like this weird. And they usually do like this trick that I'm fascinated by. It's masterfully done. They'll start off a character. Usually they're somewhat moral. And then, you know, you kind of identify with them. And then over time, either in the series, and it happens a lot more gradual in a long series or a movie, you will see that they struggle, and then they become more and moral, more and moral, more and moral as the story goes along. But they've sucked you in at the start. It was kind of like when you, I think Chris was saying, like you get, or, you know, emotionally invested in this character very early on and their struggle, I guess, they have a struggle. And then, but then they start, it's just masterfully the way they transmute that into, and then it starts getting more and more. And then you still start identifying with them. And then they hone in on that dark part of us that we all have. And I think a lot of people in, you know, can say that they think that life at times has been cruel to them and, you know, beating them down and kind of made, you know, they have a tough go of it. And so they kind of play on that. And I always think about like how they sell it. You look at the immoral characters, or the characters that are doing whatever they want. And I think people can relate to that because then they feel more in control. Right. So you have characters like, I think of the Joker or any of these characters, they do what they want. They make it look really glamorous, in my opinion. Like they make it look like really cool kind of thing. So you got money, you got power, so-called power, but it's more fear-based. And do whatever you want. You don't answer to anybody. Make your own rules. And then people can kind of, I think deep down, people are like, God, that's the way it should, you know. They can identify with that because they're under so many rules and they're under so much, like a boot on the neck kind of thing. So I'm just fascinated by it. And then you look at their true hero's journey, and I think of like real hero journeys like that we relate to, and we definitely relate to the hero journey. I think we all do. They're that part of that, really, at least I do. And but it's tough when you're working with morality and you're on that journey and that quest to, for whatever it is. There's a lot of struggle, there's a lot of sacrifice. You have to keep firm in your principles and your beliefs and keep all of that in check. It's hard. That's the test. Are you gonna stand up to that, to the pressure of that, or we collapse? And that's kind of the hero's journey that we identify with. But then you got the reverse of that, where they make it look way, you know, cooler. That's the best way I could put it. And yeah, it's really interesting how they do that flip, and I'm just fascinated by it. So yeah, it's a lot going on, and it's definitely, and it's like Brandon was saying, it's everywhere. And to think that music and movies and TV shows aren't influencing people's decisions and how they act and their morality and all these things is just crazy. Like it definitely is. And especially the younger minds. Yeah, they are really targeting that. So it's a really interesting topic. I've always been fascinated. Why do people always cheer, it seems, and root for the bad guy kind of thing, or kind of more identify with them? But I do think it's that switch that they do. Like they get you emotionally, and it usually starts off with like a goal. I think of the Punisher, and I'll talk about that maybe in a bit, but kind of like the switch they do. And I think that's what people get sucked into. And then by the end of it, you don't even realize that you're cheering for somebody that's a psychopath. They're a killer. They've killed hundreds of people. They probably raped somebody. Like it's just crazy. But then you see people really bonded to that character and actually feeling sad if something happens to them or they die or something like that. It goes that far, this flip that they do. It's fascinating to me, and I'd like to talk about it more. So but I will pass it to Jim, because I'd like to get Jim's thoughts on this.
All right, thanks guys. Well yeah, the key word here is mainstream, right? Like why is all this stuff mainstream? Like, and once you really do get your head around that, you know, all is mind, and you know that's the root cause of everything, and then you really start to pick up on this stuff. Like this is so mainstream, and you grew up with it, and it's normal, and it's like, dude, like it doesn't have to be this way. But people don't even understand that what's going on, like that their minds are being controlled. Like this isn't normal, like to think of these guys as heroes, right? Like I think of these shows, and I never watched them, but like The Sopranos, Breaking Bad, I never saw a whole episode of any of either one of those shows. I'd always hear my friends or people I worked with talking about it, like can't wait to watch it, and I can't believe see what he did this week and all that stuff. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to watch like these, well, The Sopranos, which is interesting because I like the mafia movies, though. I do have that in me where I like Goodfellas and Bronx Tale and those kind of movies, the mafia movies. But like you guys mentioned, Dexter, I saw a few episodes of that, and so I got my head around like why you can like kind of sympathize with him. But and then Hannibal Lecter is another one. So these are all like guys: Hannibal Lecter, Dexter, Walter White, Tony Soprano. These are all household names, right? Everyone knows. If I say their names, people can picture who they are. It's mainstream. They're not. Everyone knows who they are. Like, so that's like pretty fascinating that they've been able to, and more in the recent decades, it's becoming more and more of a thing to have these guys as the anti-hero. As far it keeps getting worse, I think. And I don't, like I said, I don't watch a lot, but what there's so much more stuff out there with the Netflix and Prime and all that, all these other subscription channels. Like, I know people are watching these things. And Rick, I know there was one that you would always talk about, Sons of Anarchy, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Which I never saw, but yes, but it's just mainstream. And that's kind of just, we're just trying to point that out. Like, did you ever think about that? Like, why is it, like, to anyone listening, like, why is this mainstream? Like, it's kind of like fucked up, right? It's not, it shouldn't be normal, but it is normal. But you just think it should be normal? I don't know. Like, so something that comes to mind, I always think about this is, as a kid, growing up on this Long Island, and there's just cement everywhere. Like, there's strip malls everywhere, the highways, the parking lots, just, it's just, there's just cement everywhere. And then you think that's normal, but it's really not normal. But you grow up thinking that's normal until maybe you eat some mushrooms and you're like, wait a minute. What's all this? Like, what, we should be living more in nature, but that these things become, mainstream, like Chris said, like, why is this, these things, like, in my mind? Like, and just like another thing that I think about a lot is the video games, which Derek had mentioned, and my son plays them. And like, I'm just like, I played when I was a kid, but once they started getting like really graphic, like the Call of Duty and stuff, they were getting better as I was getting older. I was out. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to pretend to kill people. And it looks so real, more realistic. I don't want to do that. I don't want to pretend that, like, I'm a hero killing people. Like, or pretend I'm the bad guy, like in Grand Theft Auto. Like, you get to be the criminal. And, like, I saw, like, my son take an old lady from the fence and drag her from that fence and throw her down on the ground. I was like, what the hell is this? And like with the killing people, it's like, it's not, oh, it's just pretend. It's make believe. It's not really real. And it's the same thing with these shows. Like, oh, you get to pretend like to like them. You don't really like them, but you get to pretend that you like them. I don't want to do that, you know? I don't want to pretend that I like this guy, like it's okay to like this guy, or it's okay to kill these people. I don't want to make pretend to kill people. I don't want to kill people in real life, so why would I want to pretend to kill people, you know? Like murder people, you know? So that is very mainstream, right? The video games, right? Very mainstream. And kids grow up playing that, and they think that's normal, pretending to kill people. So,
yeah.
Pass it back to Derek.
Yeah, Jim, well done with the covering the video game aspects of these things. And yeah, Grand Theft Auto was something I played growing up. And yeah, it's interesting thinking about just, yeah, like, wow, you can do all this, you know, fantasy stuff in the digital world and stuff, yet your mind is focused on that digital stuff, you know. And I'm speaking about these things, you know, in terms of the Hermetica universal law, you know, all is mind. So even if it's just in some fantasy cosplay, whatever the fuck, your mind is still, you know, active in that state. And so how is that translating to one's actual life and all these things? And yeah, you hear all the time, you know, like, oh, like people go to movies just to, you know, escape reality and all this stuff. And like, where are their fucking minds at with that? You know, like, why do you need to escape reality? You know, I think someone mentioned, like with like Breaking Bad and just like all these drugs, like, why do you need to fucking escape reality, kids? Like, is it really that bad? Yeah, it is. But have you not been able to take control of your life and alchemize these things? You know, it's just, it's your life. Think about it. You're just going to escape and fucking just sweep some shit under the rug and trip over that shit in real life type of stuff. So, and yeah, I get it. You know, there's so many nets, traps, and snares out there. Be aware with care. Because yes, movies and media can make nearly anything look cool and hip and whatever the fuck, right? And we see all these onlookers looking at that stuff and, you know, check it out. Possibly could relate, correlate, and emulate. It's just like the same old sad story of the monkey see, monkey do type of shit, right? It's like, and yes, it's, you know, heed to the conscious parents out there that are actually and actively, you know, brushing that bullshit aside. So, you know, their children, these young subjective minds, are not, you know, subjected to that kind of bullshit and impressioned upon, like, all this, you know, miasma. And yeah, like, just wait for the AI crap to just keep flooding in the slop and all that shit, right? So, yeah. We've noticed that Hollywood can be celebrating these villains and vigilantes quite a bit. And we see, yeah, this, the anti-hero trope, is it an archetype or is it just a label? Does it even matter? What the hell? And yeah, Rick, I think you mentioned the hero's journey and all that, right? And if that person isn't able to really circumvent the whole wheel of that spectrum of going through the whole cycle of that, then I guess they're stuck in that underworld where I guess they're festering that anti-hero aspect. So there's that anti-hero's journey that maybe isn't complete per se in the hero's journey way. Possibly, I don't know. I just kind of thinking about this on the spot, but it kind of makes sense at the same time. So yeah, like in everyone's like journey, we've come across blunders. We got to pick ourselves up. There are, you know, aspects in regards to, you know, videos we've done in regards to like perseverance. We got to persevere through all the hardships, you know, we cannot let, so yeah, like, you know, the trauma and all the tragedies that one has experienced in their life, you cannot let that make a monster out of you. You know, you have to, you know, defeat the tyrant within, the monster within. So that monster isn't projected out into the reality field for others to suffer the same situation in a sense, right? So you see movies like Batman with the, you know, the constant flashback of how he lost his parents and all that stuff. And you see kind of how he went through some of that process of trying to alchemize that or trying to, you're like, I don't want to see this happening in the world. So what the fuck? And police aren't doing their job. So I got to take it upon myself type of attitude and all that stuff. That's kind of like this vigilante archetype, if you will. And, yeah, like if we're talking from the natural law, true anarchist perspective, not the fake ass motherfucking sons of fake anarchy type of shit, but staying aligned to principles and moral code, we have to ask ourselves when, and this is what I like when watching movies with this proper aligned worldview. Of, okay, like, you see the action scenes and all, I honestly, I don't even give a fuck about all these action scenes. Like, what provoked the action scenes? Is it in self-defense? And is it, you know, to preserve, you know, what is good and right and just, you know, all these things, right? Are they coming to the aid and rescue of people that are in need and all this stuff? Or is it kind of like a gratuitous violence type of shit? Things to consider, especially, you know, with the potty mouth people like Deadpool and whatever, right? So, yeah. So, yeah, there are a lot of intriguing movies to check out. And yeah, like there's like TV series. I'll just mention this real quick before I forget it, because yeah, like we've spoken about this, especially in the, when we did that video about zombies, you know, like there's all these flavors of programmings, you know, we got the cops and in the healthcare TV series and all this stuff, you know, fucking Grey's Anatomy and Scrubs and I don't know, New Amsterdam and all this. I don't even watch TV or movies all that much, but I watch people that review some of that stuff just to keep a little bit of pulse on those things. That's just how I work it. And yeah, it's, I might be speaking a little bit out of pocket in that regard, but yeah, I've watched TV, you know, growing up, just a regular American type of shit, right? And then you got to deprogram yourself out of that stuff. So, you know, we see, you know, the TV shows like Cops and you know, all these order followers as well, like in the hospital realm, and they are heroes to, you know, certain degrees and rights and all this stuff. Yet in real life, what have we seen, especially since the dawning of the motherfucking Rona? Think about it. We have cops, you know, arresting people because they didn't wear a fucking face diaper. We have a, you know, medical staff, you know, too cowardly to call shit out and, you know, and just obey the higher chains of command and all that shit, right? And inject countless amounts of people with, you know, fucking toxic bullshit, you know? Anyways, things to consider. But no, it's glorified on television. Yeah, they're the heroes. But on TV, the propaganda machines, like we had to go out and clap our pots and pans, you know, at certain hours just because, you know, they're there working and we were, you know, ordered not to fucking work just because of some Lyris bullshit. Anyways, right? So, in regards to like anti-hero movies and, you know, taking into account of observing psychopathic behaviors, this is the key point of, you know, the title of this video, right? You know, like try to objectively observe movies, you know, try not to put yourself in, you know, feel into like, oh, that, the act, I mean, feel into these things, but at the same time, don't have these ego attachments. I mean, I see so many people getting offended. Like, we're talking points of why movies are kind of manipulative or whatever, and people get offended because, oh, I love that movie. Why are you talking shit about it? And why are you not paying attention to some of the fine details, motherfucker? Anyways, so I'm going to list some movies I actually like a good amount, yet, you know, I have issues with them and just, you know, things that are just to consider in regards to this whole topic of discussion of what we're talking about, right? And some of these movies are really well done. And I'm talking about movies like Taxi Driver and things like that. And we have to pay mind to, especially in the era of a gazillion fucking superhero movies that has the whole world on superhero fatigue. And they're wondering, you know, is this some anti-hero shit these days? Like, what the hell? Because it's done so bad, right? But those were, you know, written and directed by people that didn't, you know, write and direct and create the original characters within the comics, right? So anyways, going down the list of movies for people to check out, possibly, and I had through a couple slides of some of those, like Watchmen, Boondock Saints, which is a pretty cool one. And it really got me thinking at an early age of just like, damn, yeah, these mafioso motherfuckers, like, you know, who is taking these fools out and who's keeping them in check or letting them operate behind the scenes and all this stuff? Like, cops ain't doing the motherfucking shit. So who's really doing the goddamn shit? Like, I don't know. There's like divine masculine aspects that I appreciate of like trying to uphold the greatest good and not tolerate any forms of fucking evil and risking their fucking lives over that stuff. That is something to take heed to and be inspired by. Yet, we gotta pick and choose our hills to die on and all that shit, right? So anyways, yeah, there's movies like Fight Club, which, you know, isn't as all hyped up when you look back on it. Yeah, like, it's interesting, right? Yeah, Dark Knight Rises, that's a pretty interesting one, especially when you go into the, you know, how he was in the dojo and his master was just, you know, actually a psycho, whatever, right? And yeah, for Jim, you got, I love your accent, man, thinking about those good old movies. Yeah, like the Donnie Brasco and all that stuff, and Scarface, and you know, folks that gotta recite something as if they're so fucking Italian. Like, how many times have you seen The Goodfellas? A ballion, you know. And then there's The License to Kill, or Thrill, or Feel Ill, you know, depending if you heard that Beastie Boys album. And then there's the Alkalite atrocities of modern day bullshit, you know, content creation, miasma of the Disney diasma and all this stuff. And yeah, the Palpatine stuff going on with the Star Wars and Anakin, and just looking at his I wrote down in my notes just to like make a joke about it, but yeah, like I wrote down like Mary Sue villains, just like for the fuck of it, because, you know, Anakin, he's been clowned around by a lot of critics, like, was he Mary Sue, was he not, and this and that. So, but no, he's not much of a Mary Sue as Rey, the other newer Jedi. But anyways, so I'm gonna end it on that. In but yeah, like with Tolkienization of a bad interpretation of the Rings of Power in regards to the lore of the Lord of the Rings. And yeah, they're trying to sympathize, you know, like the orcs, they have families, you know, they, I don't know if you caught that, anyone out there, or you guys, but yeah, they're trying to make people feel bad for the bad guy sometimes. And it's just like, I'm glad that a lot of people are seeing through this shit and calling it out, at least, you know. And I'm talking about people, these YouTubers that got their shit monetized that are not initiated into esoteric information or the occults, but can dabble into some conspiratorial bullshit. But that's fucking like first veil stuff that, you know, anyone on the internet should be aware of these days. But we all got to take it further, folks, and we're not going to get it all that much through movies, yet they do help decipher certain things in this reality. And yes, they do whisper the truths, either through the hero or the villain, the protagonist, antagonist, and all that stuff. So yeah, have you had the gist of that? Anyways, I've spoken enough. Chris, go for it. Yeah,
it's the prime time crime where they mechanically maneuver your mind. My mind is doing a rewind back to Freedom Under Natural Law Conference number 2. If you haven't checked out, folks, go ahead and look up freedomundernaturallaw.com. There's a replay section. And back in Freedom Under Natural Law 2, I had a presentation called Humanity's Most Powerful Weapon. And that's really where my mind going right now. And I just want to interject before I go into what I was going to say about that presentation and humanity's most powerful weapon, is I do like to kind of think in a trivium style. A trivium was the Funnel 3 main logo, you know, based on the trivium. And so, like, the first thing we're talking about is this problem, right, with this anti-hero psychopathy, you know, psychopathy in the media and such. And one thing I really appreciated that Jerry and Brandon, almost every one of you, brought up in some way or another, how this starts very young in the childhood. And it, and I thought about just talk another Freedom Under Natural Law, number 4, where Dr. Dusty Plattner was talking about narcissism and the roots of narcissism, and showing a baby crying. This footage of like a baby crying, and the mother's not coming right away, and just the agony that, you know, the baby's going through, this incredible emotion. And that's right there to me, an early proof of what I'm getting at. Like, we need care from very early on. And they've even done terrible experiments, supposedly, that they tell you about when you study psychology in college, that like children would actually die if they didn't get any mother's care at all. And apparently that those experiments were done in some terrible place, in some terrible time. But apparently that's the case. If a little baby does not get attention, it literally dies. If you don't get the correct attention and care, you have problems. And one thing that I've come to recognize is that play is very important. And so once we've established the players and the problem, then we move on to the second part of the trivium, you know, which is, you know, we've got the grammar in place and now we're going to go into the logic. And to me, logic is like the players. It's like two baby animals playing, two kittens or two lion cubs, right? It's as natural as two kids playing together in a community or a family, right? When one kid hits the other one, they're like, ah, you know, and you feel it like, oh, eh, you know, they cry, whatever, right? Emotion, right? And then the other one sees the emotions like, I didn't really want to make them cry. I just wanted to get my sandwich or whatever, you know, or, you know, the cats are just playing. But that's how they learn empathy, by playing, by that interaction, by that relationship, and by that game, right? And with the game we're all missing, is that we're not having enough interaction when we're young. And that's creating this level of this early levels of what they call sociopathy. It's before you even get, you know, and even before you get to that is like what Dr. Dustin Plantner was talking about, which is the narcissism. And so back to where I wanted to talk about, which is humanity's most powerful weapon. In that presentation, I had a couple visuals, moral relativism spectrum, the psycho scale, right? And starting with like Pooh and Piglet and working your way through Rabbit and Bunny, you know, like these are all like weird characters that have various issues, emotional issues or interaction relationship issues. But not till you get to like the real narcissist. And I chose the, now I'm forgetting his name. There's a song about him. Somebody help me. He's the Beauty and the Beast, bad guy, kind of. Remember? Anyway, I made him because he was like a narcissist. So like when you become narcissist, like that's when you're tipping the scale on that moral relativism spectrum. You're starting to get into what we call the me first type of mentality, which is abundant in our society. And this is caused, I do think, because of poor child raising, because we're not being raised properly by communities. So we have these kind of problems, you know. And so you got, you know, the extreme one side, the vengeful, spiteful, angry, merciless, violent psychopath. And then on the other end, you got, you know, like Pooh, you know, Jesus, like the patient, calm, caring, loving, you know. And so there is a spectrum. And so that's all I kind of wanted to, you know, take people back to recognizing that, like Brandon Spencer talked about in his presentation as well, moral relativism is really the key to deciphering this whole thing, what's going on. The more moral relativism becomes acceptable, which can also be known as the me first mentality, that the more you're thinking me first and the less you're considering others empathetically, how you might hurt others, how you're doing might hurt others, the less you care about that, the more you're on that Sauron lack of empathy and psychopathic scale. And our culture is ripped apart at the seams because we don't have a lot of community interaction when we're young. Men, remember we did a show on how to be a man? Men are not allowed to be men in our society. So what do? They live vicariously through these characters. And we say this term and we toss it around, live vicariously. But when you think about what that really means is you're letting someone else live your hero story. You're letting someone else write the hero story. We're really on this logic stage of the trivium when we're considering what are we supposed to do with this problem? It's what am I supposed to do with this problem? What are you supposed to do? And that's the part that all this media and all this me first mentality lacking objective morality, understanding principles is taking people. Their vision is unclear. So this spectrum is not, you're not able to decipher it because you don't have the cipher. You don't have the key. The key is objective morality, knowing the difference between right and wrong. When you know this, you don't need, you know, you kind of make that decision like Jim, like, why would I want to pretend to kill somebody? You know, I wouldn't want to do that. And that's probably, you know, had to do with maybe he had a little more care when he was raised. I don't know. But, you know, I think that's really it. And what I really talked about in that presentation is that one of our most powerful weapons is being able to work together. And we're so far away from that right now because we're in this me first, narcissistic, all these different stages of not fully comprehending that it's our right and our responsibility to take care of these things. Stop living vicariously through all these superhero shows and TV stuff you watched and get in the driver's seat. So that's what I wanted to say on that. Jerry, you're up.
I appreciate it, Chris. You get straight to the point. I think it's great for the audience, whoever's listening. And yeah, I mean, I feel like from films, I like to gather the positive aspects of the character or something. Let's say they're overcoming a challenge and I'm like, oh yeah, I want to do that. And then I implement that into my life. But to your point, Chris, it's don't be a spectator. Don't just let life pass you on like it's a movie. It's like, no, we have to become a willing participant in this story called, let's say, the fight for freedom. Now, that what you were saying, Chris, oh my God, just so many thoughts came to my mind because I'm somewhat guilty of that adult not giving attention to my niece. I'm sorry, my niece, because you know, I'm making money right now, you know, I cannot give her attention, and that's going to change after this conversation. So just wanted to say what I gained through this conversation so far. I think that's a lot more important. When you see the signs of, you know, isolation, and then that just causes a domino effect. Like, nah, it's incredible what you said, that it's, I guess, proven that the children wither away without their mother's care. So I just want to give out a few quotes from this website. So there's this series I watched on Netflix called The Ripley. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but essentially the main character is this psychopath. And what I also was thinking of when I was thinking about Dexter was all the lies that he, it's kind of like all the cover-ups. And anyways, so yeah, this guy Ripley, he essentially makes a living. I guess he has this fake credit card, or he's using someone's credit card, and that's, he's living that way. And then this family says, oh, find my son in Italy. Anyways, this guy, he's made his money, as you can say, taking people's stuff. But then he pretends to be this guy going to this family's son. He finds his son in Italy, pretends that he knows him from high school just so he can make a buck, right? And he, as you just mentioned, with the whole moral relativism spectrum, is that me mentality. So he goes as far as killing the son just so he can, I guess, have the money. And that's the main character of the show. And I'm just like, oh, it's a drag watching this, but I'm just going to watch it, I suppose, because someone recommended it to me. And it, I think you guys already pointed this out, but I was thinking, why do people watch this stuff? The gore, right? And I think it's, I guess, kind of like Rick said, that we all have that dark side, and they just, I don't know, maybe for entertainment purposes. But I was watching, looking at the reviews of the series, and this one slide I made, it says it's a really great TV show, this and that. And it's got some good reviews, but this dude is absolutely a psychopath. And people love watching that stuff. So that's like a big red flag to me as to why do we like why do people like this stuff? Perhaps it's because of the lack of care during childhood. All right. So I'll read a few quotes or notes. So an anti-hero, like I just mentioned, Ripley, it was originally a movie. So Mr. Ripley by Patricia Highsmith, he's the anti-hero as a sociopathic charmer willing to kill to maintain his lies. Ripley is a quintessential anti-hero. Jack Sparrow in Pirates of the Caribbean series, Jack Sparrow's eccentricity, self-interest, and morally ambiguous actions make him an iconic anti-hero. So there's the pattern here of the whole Satanism and the self-interest. And then this series I watched, Deadwood. So Al Swearengen, he's not a, like, how can you say this? He doesn't display cowardly behavior, and that's why you might be drawn to him. But at the end of the day, he's not moral. So Al, a powerful and cunning brothel owner with a complicated moral compass, is a classic Western antihero. And at last, Daenerys Targaryen, despite her initial portrayal as a compassionate ruler, Daenerys' relentless quest for power and her eventual destructive actions in Westeros mark her as a tragic anti-heroine. So, I mean, there's this other series I watched, and it's just, it's hard to watch, man. It's called The Shogun. And the main character supposedly is this Japan king. And he's still not morally right, therefore I can't dig the show. Jim, I wish I didn't even watch it, but yeah, this stuff is everywhere, man, so just be aware. And I'll pass it to Rick.
Good stuff, Jerry. Actually, all of you guys are really bringing some great stuff, and stuff I'm going to be thinking about long after this show. And I get what you're saying, Chris. I think you brought up an important part about family and the destruction of the family, and it is definitely happening. And when you start destroying the family, and then care gets destroyed, or that's not good. And then possible traumas as you're growing up being unhealed. And then you add the aspect of social media, you know, raising children now, which is a whole show in its own and a scary thought. It's no wonder that over time, of course, people are becoming desensitized to what we're talking about, the violence and all the immorality that's going on in pretty much every aspect of our lives that you can think of, especially when it comes to social media and movies and series and stuff like that. And as I was saying just a while ago, I'm fascinated by this why people identify with the anti-hero. And the more I think about it, I think a lot of the cases is people realize that they've been ruled over for so long. So like, what is the anti-hero? But it's a rebellion against authority. I think that's why people identify with it. As I was saying earlier, people are just sick of being ruled over. So they see this anti-hero doing whatever they want, saying whatever they want, not worried about any consequence. And I think they tap into that. And it's very interesting. You could talk about this forever because it goes really deep, as you guys are all bringing up great points. It's so multifaceted what's going on. And yeah, the anti-hero is something I think about so often, like why, even myself, why I'm drawn to certain characters. What am I identifying with in them? And it's a lot of the things that we are discussing. And I think of, you know, like shows like Jim brought up Sons of Anarchy, a show that I loved. And the character starts off, Jax Teller, he's in a bike gang, but he's pretty innocent and hasn't really done a lot of nasty things. And the very first season and first few episodes, they really get you to identify with him. And then over time, but over the course of these 7 seasons, he just becomes so immoral. And I mean, murdering people and it's just downhill quickly, to where he's just murdering people and doing horrible things and things he said at the beginning he would never do. And he had these kind of rules and, you know, morals that he wouldn't break, and he does. And then, but it's fascinating because at the end, they kind of try to make him redeem himself in this weird way. And then he dies at the end, and you can watch reaction videos right here on YouTube where people are bawling. You watch reaction videos when this character, Jax Teller, dies at the end, and people are crying and so upset and not realizing, like, you're crying for a guy that is a murderer. Like, he's done everything horrible, but people identify this. So they really tap in once again to emotions, I think, is what they really manipulate too. And I'm also fascinated by the self-defense principle, because a lot of these characters, when I think of characters like the Punisher and stuff like that, or even John Wick at the very beginning, it's kind of like they set this up where it's a self-defense principle. Harm was done to them, and they retaliate. And we've had discussions about this kind of off air. I'm always fascinated by, somebody does harm to you and you have the self-defense principle that we've talked about, but then it goes further than that. Like with the Punisher, then they start going after evil people and killing them. And then but I've always asked you, and I've talked to you guys, and I've asked other people, like, there's this lag time. Like, when does it drift away from the self-defense principle and just become violence and murder? Even though you're killing a bad person or you're doing violence to a bad person who's done bad things. I don't know. I just think there's a discussion there, because I think that gets confusing or it gets kind of gray area. And so I'm just really interested in that aspect too. Like, when does it stop becoming self-defense? When does it stop becoming that? And then that's what they do over the course of a lot of these shows and movies and stuff, is they set it a little bit in morality at the beginning. You kind of identify, you understand why the character is doing what they do, but then it's a switch they do over time. And then it just becomes, they're doing so many horrible things, but you're still emotionally invested because of that very first connection you have with the character, which is usually based on some kind of wrong done to them. The only thing I thought of that was kind of the opposite of that was the movie Spawn. And he was a horrible person, a government agent, an assassin. And then he dies and he agrees to become the general of Hell's Army. He comes back. And then over the course of the movie, I can only speak for the movie, he finds his morality. He doesn't want to do all the things that are being asked of him. And it's kind of a different, it's like the kind of reverse flip. And maybe Darth Vader's another one for the Star Wars fans, where he has this redemption arc at the end. So it's kind of like the opposite, but interesting. And so I just want to add at the end is that when I think about the hero's journey, as I was saying, the hero's journey is, it's a rough go. It's a tough road to walk. And, the anti-hero journey may be a lot easier and cooler looking, but it's just filled and littered with emptiness and immorality and all of that. But that's how they don't kind of add that in. They kind of sell it as this good thing. So, and more exciting, as I was saying. So that's kind of my thoughts on it. And it's a great topic, guys. I'm glad that we brought it to the table. You guys are doing a great job breaking it down. So I will pass it on to you, Jim.
Brandon, did you want to go? I think you were up.
Chris, you had mentioned earlier about playtime. Playtime is extremely important for kids because that's how they understand and set up rules and boundaries. And without it, then there's a misguidance when it comes to interacting and building relationships with others. But one of the main things, you know, when it comes to your own individual journey is understanding the authentic versus the inauthentic, the real versus the fake, truth versus falsity. You know, so you have the proxy, you know, this satanic culture, this satanic mindset, this, you know, satanic world that we live in always takes something that's authentic and it creates this imitation. It creates this statue. It creates this proxy. And that's kind of what we see with the hero's journey is the true hero's journey, which, you know, wasn't an archetypal thing. And if you aren't familiar what a archetype is, it's just an original pattern or symbol which copies are made from. You know, I always kind of equate it to, you know, when Nate Cap talks about, you know, getting things down to it, like its purest form. I always kind of like equate it with that. And then you have in like psychology, you know, where Jung talked about, you know, like with archetype, you know, like these primordial thoughts that are, you know, reside in our unconscious that everyone, you know, knows because it's been used, you know, like so many times through repetitions and through so many cultures that it's almost ingrained in our thoughts, in our minds. You know, but the hero's journey was, you know, a myth or, you know, used in mythology, to get the, you know, like the main character or, you know, like the protagonists. And this was in like pretty much every ancient culture, you know, where a individual goes on a quest, goes on a journey, goes on an adventure to attain a specific goal. And on this quest, on this journey, there will be certain trials, certain tribulations that they will have to face and overcome, you know, certain challenges. And there was a lesson that had to be learned, a deep lesson that had to be learned, usually a moral lesson, you know, which was always equated, you know, like with a symbolic nature. But ultimately returning home, you know, victorious in their journey, victorious in their battle, but they was transformed. They was not the same individual, you know, when they left, because there was this internal process that took place. And, you know, this individual is said to be born again. And if anybody wants to like dive deeper in what the hero's journey is, then you should check out Joseph Campbell's work. Because one thing that people miss when it comes to the hero's journey is even though it was displayed in myths and storytelling, the hero's journey was always an internal journey. It was an internal quest. It was an internal, you know, adventure. So this archetypal, you know, like motif was symbolically about the journey to one's inner kingdom and to, you know, self-realization, you know, self-awareness, you know, higher states of consciousness, you know, healing one's trauma and going through the alchemical process. You know, but now we have what I call the zero journey, you know, the zero's journey. And, you know, with the zero's journey, there's no need for you to go within yourself. You know, there's no need for you to learn, you know, hell about yourself. Just sit back, you know, like on the couch, watch the journey on the screen while you cheer and celebrate, you know, others. And while you, you know, get conditioned with immoral action and behaviors of the anti-hero. Because the anti-hero was always the protagonist that lacks, you know, like the heroic qualities. And they possess, you know, what they would, you know, term questionable morals, and often villainous, you know, villainous behaviors. And here is the quote that I would label the anti-hero with: good intentions with unjust means. And Rick, you ask, why is it that most people, you know, associate with that? Well, just take that quote right there: good intentions with unjust, you know, like unjust means. Is that not most people in society? Is that not most people who go out and join government? They have good intentions, but they're willing to do unjust means. Is that not most people who go out and join, you know, like corporations? They have good intentions, but they have unjust means. Is this not what we see with order followers? They may have good intentions, but they're willing to go about unjust means. Because the anti-hero in today's society is more relatable than the actual hero themselves is. See, in the ancient world, man was more moral, man was more principled, so the hero was more relatable because the hero had those internal qualities like courage, you know, care, willpower, strength, you know, a sense of honor, a sense of integrity, a sense of principles. You know, they had, you know, like humility.
Good point.
You know, modern man doesn't have those qualities. So there's this sense of emptiness. So with the anti-hero who lacks those heroic qualities, it's more easier for modern man to see sameness and likeness and identify with the anti-hero, because identify just means sameness and likeness. Because deep down, the average person knows that they lack those heroic qualities. They deep down, they know they are a coward. Deep down, they know that they are in fear. So if you lack those qualities, how can you identify with that heroic myth who has those qualities? You can't, because you're on two different frequencies. So you have to give them that same frequency in order for them to relate to, which is the frequency of the anti-hero. That's why it's so relatable in today's society, because the hero was all about inspiring others, about inspiration. What does it mean to inspire, to breathe in, to fulfill? Because when you hear those rich stories of myths and storytellings of, you know, the true heroes, it gave you that sense of inner fulfillment to where when that story was done, you was inspired. You had a sense of encouragement. But you don't get that when you know, watch these movies of the anti-hero. You're kind of just left wanting more. So you still have that sense of emptiness that isn't really being fulfilled, because there is no inspiration when it comes to the anti-hero. It's only, you know, craving more and more, because deep down, you know you should be going on that hero's journey. But again, they give you that proxy. They give you the imitation. They give you that statue. They give you that fakeness, you know, to where you know, you eat it up and you consume it, and then you're still left with an empty stomach and you're craving more and more. Then what are you going to do? You go binge watch more. You want more movies. You know, you want more of, you know, those video games. You want more and more of whatever is being fed to you. And that's really, you know, like what we see, you know, people just binge watching for a sense of fulfillment, you know, still trying to get some form of fulfillment externally. And that's what we see. You know, there is this whole genre of reaction content. And what do a lot of them, you know, like react to? Just binge watching movies. And what are these movies filled with? A lot of like anti-hero, you know, things, a lot of freaking like anti-hero myths. And people just binge watch, you know, like wanting more and more. Yeah, because you're just left with a sense of emptiness, a sense of nothing, because there is no inner fulfillment. There is no, you know, breathing of life. There is no, you know, breath. There is no inspiration that comes from this anti-hero, you know, thing. Because, again, there is no heroic qualities. And these heroic qualities are within all of us. We just have to awaken them. Because deep down, we are all heroes to a certain degree. But, you know, when you hear the story of the true hero, you know, people think of, you know, people with like superhuman strength or like, you know, superpowers. That's not what a true hero is. That's what they was talked about and depicted in myths. But in today's society, a true hero is one who stands up and does the right moral thing. One who speaks the truth, one who's willing to stand up in the face of tyranny and evil and do the right thing. That's what a true hero is, because that takes courage, that takes care, that takes willpower, that takes strength, that takes a sense of morality, a sense of principles, integrity, hell, honor. And that's why I say most people lack that. And they're given that proxy. They are given that husk. They are given that imitation. They're given that statue. That fakeness of the anti-hero. Because again, good intentions with unjust means. That is most people in society. They have good intentions, but when it comes to these hands, they are willing to use unjust, and they may not directly, you know, use unjust means, but they'll support it indirectly by unjust means. That makes them that great magician, you know. And Manly P. Hall would always say in his lectures, you know, man is not good enough to go to heaven, but he's not bad enough to make it into hell. And that's what I'm talking about, is most people would fall kind of in that gray era, you know, like that kind of gray, you know, area, which still makes them immoral, but they're not like, you know, a psychopathic evil, and they're not, you know, truly good, because their actions kind of, you know, are like the checkerboard floor on the Freemasonic board. You know, yeah, they may do some good here and there, but then, you know, it's, you know, the next action is bad, but that still makes them bad, you know, inherently. I'm sorry. I mean, that still makes them hell immoral, because they're not doing a free will choice when it comes to good. So good intentions with unjust means, that's why the anti-hero is so relatable, because people can see themselves in that same position, because that's really how most people view themselves and view others. You know, most people say, you know, man, you know, like, isn't good, but, you know, man isn't bad, because most people say there's some form of gray area, you know, when it comes to morality. And a lot of people actually think that, you know, oh, you know, when it comes to morality, it's not all black and white. It's shades of gray. Wrong. There are no shades of gray when it comes to morality. None. And that's why this anti-hero, you know, myth is being, you know, spread in all, you know, like in entertainment, because it's more relatable to modern man compared to ancient man. It really wasn't as relatable, because ancient man, or in a lot of ancient cultures, that shit would have been called out.
Yeah. That's great points, Brandon. Wow.
Yeah.
And I get what you're saying too about the like these hero qualities, and it's that hard work that people have to do on themselves that they're lacking. Like all the qualities that you brought up that make a hero, a real hero. And those qualities, that's hard work, that internal work, that internal journey. I'm so glad you brought that point up, that it's this internal struggle within all of us. And that's the hard work. And then, as you said, they get this proxy, this anti-hero proxy, that is just, yeah, people just, yeah, living through movies and series and TV shows, sitting on their couch, kind of living the easier way, because they don't want to do that hard work. And yeah, the social engineers feed into that. They know exactly what they're doing. And that's why people are kind of in this stand down mode, I always say. Very fascinating. Good stuff, man.
And remember, you can't just sell a lie and have people buy into it. You have to dress it up and make it look good. So you have to put the lie in the three-piece suit. You have to put, you know, the lie in all the makeup and the wig and, you know, all the weave and all the fakeness to make it appear as though it's the truth. That's what we see a lot of times in these, you know, like freaking these gangster movies and these anti-hero movies, is, you know, the protagonist, you know, is a well-looking, you know, good-looking individual. You know, they're rich, you know, they have a nice suit, but they're doing immoral things.
Right. Because that's what I was saying at the beginning. Dress it up.
Yep. You have to dress up. You have to dress up the lie, because you can't just sell, you know, like you just can't give them the poison. Like, the dog's not going to just swallow the pill. Nope. You have to give it something that it likes and mask that nasty taste with something that tastes good. And then they'll gobble it up. And that's what they do, you know, help with us.
Exactly. That's such a great point, because they do. That's what I was trying to say at the beginning, is that they sell that lie. Like, it's such a glamorous thing. You're going to have all this money, and you're going to have women or men, or, you know, you're not going to have to answer to anybody. They dress this lie up, and then that's what they sell people. And then that's why we're at where we're at, because people are buying into that lie. Great, you know, great points, guys. I love this talk. This is really good stuff.
Yeah, so there's definitely a metaphor there between the mafia movies and the government, right? And I had been watching videos. I had maybe last year more often. There's a lot of gangsters who have YouTube channels, like ex-mafia guys. And one of the guys is Michael Francesi, and he had written a book called Mafia Democracy, and he's comparing like the government to the mafia. And I haven't read it, but I watched a few videos of them talking about it. And so that's really like, there's a metaphor there. It's like people don't, maybe they don't equate it, but they're rooting for the mafia in the same way they're rooting for the government. Like, because the government is immoral all day long, and they don't want to see it that way. So people watch these mafia movies, and like these immoral guys are the heroes. And when it comes down to it, the government is the higher power over the mafia, right? Like they're the real gangsters. So there's a correlation. Just something I thought I'd bring up. And what's funny too is I find that all those mafia guys.
Jim, there's a movie with, I think it's Robert De Niro, we just saw, that's in theaters. And I think he plays two characters in the movie, Robert De Niro. And then he actually says that in the movie, because they're talking about they're doing bootlegging and stuff. And then they're talking about the senators. And then he's like, well, those are the real gangsters. We can't mess with those gangsters.
There's like, I'm not even like a big movie buff or anything, but I recently saw that clip from the Godfather where the senator is meeting with Michael Corleone in like Las Vegas or something. And it's like, yeah, like the government's got the upper hand. Definitely. Like they're the real gangsters. But
for sure.
But then you find, if you listen to these guys, they seem to be statists. They're big Trump fans, like Sammy the Bull loves Donald Trump, and this other guy, John Elite, they're like the Gambino crime families. This guy, John Elite, he was like the order follower for Gotti. Like he would go out and do all the kills, like the hits. But now he's like, he just became a councilman for his town in New Jersey. So now he's part of the state, right? Just interesting. Like, but anyway, the government is the real mafia. That's for sure. Like, and we're always talking about morality. That's the whole point. And all these shows, the characters are doing these immoral things, even when they're trying to, like, be the good guy, like there's always this collateral damage where other people are getting hurt, innocent people getting hurt. And like, that's just like, nobody cares, thinks about that kind of shit. It's just part of the show. And, but anyway, and like Brandon's saying, it's just all programming. It's just to get us to just accept, you know, immorality as mainstream, you know, and like moral relativism is like just a word that people don't even, it's not part of their vocabulary, and it's all part of this conditioning. I was going to talk about Robin Hood a little bit because this subject came up. For some reason, I was drawn to just watch that movie again. I remember watching it when I was like a teenager. And there's a whole bunch of Robin Hood movies. So it's interesting. It's like Batman, like they take the same character, but they write a whole different story, like a whole script. They do that with Robin Hood too. So the Kevin Costner movie, Prince of Thieves. And then there's another one that came after that with Russell Crowe, just called Robin Hood. And they're two totally different stories. And the one with Russell Crowe is actually more like moral and natural law and like acting in self-defense. And like, it's almost like the Batman Begins of Robin Hood. It's like, how did he became Robin Hood or Robin of Oxley and all that. But it was like worse, like bad acting, like whatever, less choppy. But the Prince of Thieves movie was like a really good movie to watch, but it tricks people up. So, and yeah, you get all that where Robin Hood is the hero, but he's stealing from people to give to the poor. Like that's the story. And this is an old story, right? This is folklore. And that's why I guess I was drawn to it, because like the anti-hero from long ago, and it's still relevant to this day. They're still like making movies. There was another one that came out in 2018.
Oh man, that that Robin Hood. If you seen that movie, what the villain says who worked with the Catholic Church, oh yep. My gosh, he says yep. some of the most truthful stuff in any movie. Yeah. Is he like, we need these motherfuckers on their knees begging to the church? And he says some shit that is so goddamn true. If you can find that scene, you may want to check it out, because you yep. talking about a villain saying some of the most truthful stuff about religion. Like, man, like
that makes the whole movie, Brandon, worth watching. Just that scene.
It really does.
What he says, I didn't even see that one.
Yeah, what he says about religion is on point.
So yeah, that's one I didn't watch yet. But the Prince of Thieves one is it ends up that his plot is to steal all the money, and then he's saving it to give to the king, because he believes so much in the king's like the king is God, like the legitimacy of the king, and that if he gets the money from the villain, the sheriff of Nottingham, and he's not saving it, like he's saving it to win back the honor of the king for the people, right? And it's also establishing that, you know, strong belief in the hierarchy, which is where they want everyone to believe as well. So good old Richard the Lionheart. And then in the other movie, it's King John who's like the bad guy, and all the other tribes, the clans are really like revolting against him and like standing up for their rights. So it's two totally different stories, which was interesting, but I don't know. I think we've been going a long time here, so it's an hour and a half.
It was a good talk.
Pretty much said everything I needed to say, and that's amazing. Just the whole point is that morality is being fucked with. Your minds are being obfuscated. These are mind control techniques to keep people stupid. I'm out.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah, no, Chris, we're going to be running short on time. We're hour and a half deep up in this. That's great, right? Time flies. And all that stuff. Exposing the lies. So I guess in conclusion, right, as far as my end and all this stuff, yeah, like there's some movies that are actually quite great at portraying, you know, these, you know, archetypes or tropes or whatever semantics and all this shit, right? You know, if it's done right, all right, like if there's depth and there's layers. And like there's that character arc as we're talking about and all these things, right? And you know, you can see they're kind of going through the shadow work and the proper hero's journey or hero anti-hero journey, whatever, right? But they're actually making it through, and they have that redeemer and all these things. Or you actually just understand why a bad guy is a bad guy and what, you know, was cultivated within that journey to, you know, have him stagnated into that, you know, immoral behavior and all this stuff, you know. So it's kind of portraying, you know, to make people understand what not to do, right? Hey, this is immoral, people. You're not, there's no gray zone of, you know, all this stuff as Brandon was talking about. And yeah, Jim, you touched on that, right? Rick as well, I think. Fuck, everyone did. Y'all brought up some great points as well. I appreciate all that. For sure.
I think Lord of the Rings
extra really... notes on top of my notes, you know.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I was just wanted to add, Derek, to what you were saying. I think Lord of the Rings for me really does a really pretty decent job of kind of showing both sides of it through those three movies. So I just wanted to add that in.
Yeah, totally. And Tolkien was criticized, you know, and there's umpteen gazillion videos on YouTube were like, oh, like questioning, like, well, was Gollum in, you know, why didn't they kill Gollum before and this and that? There were fucking reasons, and you just have to decipher all that, and it's just, it's magical.
Yeah, it's kind of like that gray area that Brandon was talking about. Might be a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
Interesting. And, it's a great show, movie.
Yeah, totally. And we have to review these things through. And yeah, we can get lost into the movies and the series and whatever you guys are watching and all that stuff. Yet, can we not be that objective observer to see, you know, what is actually going on, to decipher what is being portrayed in all these layers? Because there are proper directors and producers that are doing legit shit to whatever degree, right? And all that stuff. And like Peter Jackson, yeah, he's great. Yet, yeah, like not everyone's going to agree, myself included, on how, you know, that whole movie was, you know, made and what they left or took out or added on to the book, all that stuff. So, you know, going back to the anti-hero stuff, Jim, you brought up a great point, and this needs to be emphasized a little bit more in regards to just like people looking at what kind of collateral damage was done. You know, you see like Marvel Avengers and all this stuff. Yeah, they're, you know, saving the world and this and that. Yet, you know, like there's billions of damage control of all these buildings and cities and infrastructure and all that stuff. That's something to consider. Yeah, like you have to weigh the scales of like, all right, so we had to defend this stuff. Like, were those actions necessary? Like, yeah, you have these superpowers and whatever the fuck. And like all that aside, like, you know, big deal. Like superpowers are not really something to be considered in the real life, aside from, you know, whatever the rubberment in military industrial complex has with H-bombs and whatever the fuck is going on with AI these days. Anyway, so to understand psychopathic behavior, yeah, look at these, you know, what we're talking about in these this media stuff and these archetypes objectively, and understand the behavior of what not to do. You know, is that violating another person's free will rights, right? So that's just something to consider. And yeah, like it's just interesting. I wanted to bring this up because, yeah, Brandon, it's just like the conditioning of all these things. It's just like chipping away at the proper moral human psyche. And it kind of brought up a thought of in the movie Boondock Saints, where I had a slide of that, and I mentioned that earlier. But the first scene is like their first job that they have. They're working in a like a butcher factory, a slaughterhouse. And so like those types of things, I was thinking about just, you know, people working in those facilities in real life, or, you know, working in a slaughterhouse. That chips away at one's like just moral integrity, right? Just seeing all this violence all the time, the blood and all this stuff, all the dead corpse. And all, like, we have to take these things into consideration, right? So fill your mind and your cups with more of that good and, you know, what is more righteous and conscious and divine. Not just be, you know, like all this gratuitous violence. Why? We don't need it. You know, like we don't need to stare into the abyss, right? There's a song that Joe Phipps has on that, right, Chris? Oh, yeah. Ambassador, brother. And yeah, we'll funnel it through to the end of the conversation. Huh? Double meaning.
Or triple. Yeah, yeah, it's good. It's you know, it's hard to stop this one. It's a good topic. I had a lot of notes, but, you know, I just wanted to say on all these TV shows and movies, it's, they always try to make it about good and bad, but it's really about right and wrong. You know, making our choices, whether we make them right or wrong. And our choices generally are made by emotions. Most people's decisions are driven by trauma, pain, and fear. And if you're following the president or the governor or some thought leader, you know, simple action as far as the trivium, you know, rhetoric, Stop letting your decisions be dictated by your emotions, guided by the actions of others. You know, that takes working on our relationships and working together to build community long term. And how we, I think Jerry caught right onto it, taking care of children. I really see the solution. Showing that care and spending time with children, I really think is one of the best you know, solutions to this problem that we're describing, but understanding that, you know, it's about right and wrong decisions. And so we should close it up. I just want to say also last thing, as far as I'm considered, self-defense is leading up to the moment of something happening, and the moment of something happening, most of the time things can be prevented by good self-defense is being prepared. And then the times when something happens and you can't do anything about it, the right or the wrong has already been done. Anything you do to follow up is retribution or compensation. And I'm not saying there shouldn't be some kind of compensation, but it's no longer officially self-defense. And all this stuff about revenge and killing people is generally driven by trauma, pain, and fear, and not by true morality and protection of the innocent. That would almost always be done leading up to and in the moment, in my mind. So that's more for a future talk. Thanks for staying up a little late with us tonight, guys. And I love this talk. We'll go at it again next time. Thanks for checking out the One Great Work Warriors. Much love, all. Good night.
Right.